Succession number 27083, reel 17.
So you were only 3 weeks of Porton Down, then you returned, presumably, to Whale Island.
That's right, yes. And at some stage, we went, and this was traditional, we went to Lark Hill, the Army Gunnery School, and we spent a week there with the Army long course equivalent. It was a week where we learned about bombardment, naval gunfire support and that sort of thing. We actually went out into Salisbury Plain and fired some army guns and so on. It was a very relaxed week. We drew stumps at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we played games and things competitively. And then it ended up on the, I suppose, the Thursday night, with a monumental guest night, and so forth. Very, very good liaison, made a lot of friends, and of course, sometime afterwards, either they or the next course came down to Whale Island, and you did the same thing in reverse, sort of thing. We did firings at, did all sorts of gun drill and so forth, both on Whale Island, and you fired close-range weapons out the far side of South Sea Beach over at the name is slipped out for the moment, Eastney. And you went to Wembley, a bit this side of Plymouth, for larger scale firings, 4 or 5 inch, that sort of thing. And you also went out in the assigned gunnery firing ship, which at the time was the Modeste. And this was good practical stuff. And you had to know what you were up to. Otherwise, you were withdrawn from course. It's as simple as that. In the course of life at Whale Island, there are two incidents that might entertain you. One was that it was traditional that you didn't complete your long course. You didn't pass out, you didn't qualify as a gunnery officer, unless you had been subjected to the punishment of doubling round the island. And the island was about 3/4 of a mile in periphery. That doesn't sound too bad, but at various strategic points, such as the parade ground, North Battery, West Battery where the gun drill occurred, North Battery where there were directors and so forth, and then on the eastern side, the ammunition section. And after you had set off, say from the parade ground, because as often as not, it was some fault in the parade ground that initiated this punishment, you got to West Battery, and out would come one of the chief gunner instructors. And as you had passed it, he would bellow after you, pay by turn, and it was obvious who you were because you were wearing your white ankle gaiters. And then when he passed you, and you passed him in the other direction, he would say, "Pay by turn." And so we were double up and down, opposite each station, as it were, 3 or 4 times. This added enormously to the length of the business, and it was tricky. Well, we all went through this. And one of our number, who sadly is dead now, poor chap, clever chap he was, good tennis player, not really a typical naval officer somehow. What do I mean by that? He just didn't seem to absolutely fit. but a nice guy, a little odd and clever, as I said. One of his handicaps, if you like, was that he was extremely unfit. And he worried about being sent to double around the island, knowing that it was an inevitability. Sooner or later, Nemesis would strike. And so it came. So it happened. And he was sent to double round. And the rest, of course, we heard from him afterwards. And he got, this occurred, initiated on the parade ground, and he got to West Bantry. And just as he got to West Bantry, the general broadcast sounded the bugle, which was stand easy. This was 10:30 in the forenoon. And out from the battery poured sub-lieutenants and sailors and everybody else with their caps off to light up and blow a cigarette for 10 minutes and so forth. And there was this chap with a rifle, with his white gaiters, obviously doubling round the island. And I said he was a clever chap, and he was, and he thought quite quickly. And he went up to the nearest sailor, who of course had paid no attention to him, and said, you didn't salute me. And the chap couldn't salute because he didn't have a cap on. And the unfortunate sailor looked pretty unhappy and startled. He said, haven't you been told to salute an officer? What's your name? Hand me your station card. I took his station card. He did this quite a number of times, collected half a dozen or so. By which time he'd, of course, completely regained his own stamina and breath and so forth. On he went to the next station. And it was entirely for churches, but he got, say, half a dozen cards out of the first battery, and still picked up a few minutes left of stand easy time, and it was still out there, and totally ignoring a passing long course officer sent to double route at the next battery, and so on. And all in all, he collected about the inside of a of 20 station cards, and he got his timing right, and he took his time over it, and he was down for a walk when he was out of sight and that sort of thing. Took a hell of a time in. And eventually he got back in sight of the parade ground, and the parade training officer was a man called Tom Trubridge, no relation to the Admiral. I relieved him later on, that's another story. When he got inside the parade ground, he pulled himself together a bit. But he sort of pulled his hair down over his eyes and over his forehead, and he spat in his hands and rubbed them over his face to simulate sweat and so on. And he shambled up to the parade training officer and saluted him, panting with breath, wasn't the least bit out of breath. Double round the island, sir. The following ratings failed to salute me, handed over 20 station cards, request you take the necessary disciplinary action. And that was that. Well, of course, that meant that the unfortunate parade training officer himself, due to be teaching subs and so on, had to spend the whole of the first hour of the following forenoon at the commander's defaulters table dealing with this lot. Well, the buzz got round quite quickly on this, and the parade training officer didn't come down with last night's shower either. And of course, in the course of the ensuing week, the sub-lieutenants got hold of the business. They realized that this is the way out. And shortly afterwards, a certain sub-lieutenant was sent round and did the same thing Didn't get quite as many cards, but he played the same game. I went up to the Brave training officer on return to the Brave and said, I'm in trouble around the island, sir. Following ratings for instilling me. Request to get an interdisciplinary action. Oh, said the Brave training officer. These men tell the truth.
Yes, sir.
Now, you're just the chap we've been looking for to make sure that discipline is maintained. Double round again and see if you can find any more. But that stopped it. on our long course, we had three Marines, one of whom was utterly useless. I think he passed. I'm not sure if he passed or not. He was a young chap, very pleased with himself, quite insufferable. But anyway, never went anywhere. There was another one who was quite an elderly chap to do this. And he went off to Hasler, across the water, and then the nearest naval hospital. And he went off to have his varicose veins dealt with, which had been the need for it had become more imminent, I think, because of all the dubbing around several went on. And I mention this as indicative of the medical standards of the day. And he was away for, I forget what, about 3 weeks. And when he came back, and you may say this story could have lost little in the telling, and that may be true, but it's not the sort of thing that you would have made up, I don't think. And we said, how are you? Paddy Killen was his name. We said, how are you? Well, you're looking pretty fit, and so forth. No, we said, I've been through rather a time. As you know, I went in for my, had my varicose veins dealt with. And I appear to have had a very enthusiastic surgeon. Because while I was under the anaesthetic, they dealt with my veins. They whipped out my tonsils and adenoids, and they circumcised me. So when I came to, I was sore at both ends and in the middle. And that was there. We also had an Australian who was actually the senior boy. We had a New Zealander, and we had an Indian called Shandy Kuravilla. Terribly nice man. Came from a very aristocratic old Indian family. Had pots of money, and was one of two of us who actually owned a car, and he got an export Hillman bag just like that, absolutely brand new, and so on. And he was a great one for the girls. He was tall, very good looking, black as night, or nearly so, terribly nice, great fun, but he would have a go at the girls.
But he had pots of money, and the girls liked that.
He had pots of money. And he used to go out for the weekends. We all did for the weekends, separately. He used to, as often as not, go up to London. Sometimes he had met people, and they asked him to quite grand houses in the country and so forth, where he was a huge success, and so on. And he was very popular, of course, and very, very amusing, too. And one Monday morning, end of the weekend and all that, and we were being given, it was about, we packed up work, I think, at 12:30 and went to lunch, and it was about 12 o'clock, and we'd been subjected to a singularly boring and rather ill-delivered lecture by one of our instructors. And Shandy Kuruvilla had not yet turned up. And about 12 o'clock, the door burst in, and in staggered Kuruvilla. He was limping. He had sort of awful sores over his cheek, which were almost, they were sort of saturating, and nothing had really quite healed. He had a black eye, which you could discern despite his black skin or dark skin, and so forth. And he trotted into the back row and sort of sank into a chair. And being a fairly ill-disciplined lot, we all turned round and said, ignored our instructor, and said, what's up with you, Shandy? And so forth. Anyway, the instructor gave up a bit 2 minutes later, realizing he hadn't got his class any longer. And away we went to lunch. And some of us went, most of us went the back way across, and we met at the bar. Glass of beer from chatting up this chap, what on earth happened. And he said he was very keen to very keen on his riding, so he enjoyed his country weekend. And he said, well, I was I went on this quarters weekend, a lovely girl, and she was a keen rider too. And they lent their horse, and away we went. And I was sort of busy looking at the girl and rather than the horse. And the horse stumbled, and it threw me. And I caught my foot in the stirrup, and it dragged me. And there we are. By this time, we'd reached the bar. And shortly afterwards, two or three of the rest of us had gone around the other way, around the front of the building, where the cars were parked, came up and said, Shandy, what's happened to your car? And it transpired that the whole of the off side of his brand new Hillman was stove in. And then the truth came out. He hadn't been to a country house at all. He'd been to a nightclub in London. And in the small hours of Monday morning, when he had a whale of a weekend and was absolutely out, he was driving back. And this is the barely believable part of the story. He said that it was just beginning to get light because it was in the summer. And he was driving round the Devil's Punch Bowl, and he fell asleep. And the next thing he knew was that he had left the road and crashed through the hedge and was going down the hill and went on going down until his car had evidently hit a tree and he passed out. And when he came to, the car was on two wheels only, and it took him a little time to sort of reorientate himself. And he managed to get out of the car, and he managed to put it back on two wheels, on four wheels. And then he said, typical of him, I then had a problem, because he said, I couldn't find the hole in the hedge on my way in order to get out, so I had to make another one. Well, silly story. A more personal one, and not quite so funny. We went towards the end of the course, something like 3 weeks before our exams, our final exam. We had a solid 3 weeks of exams at the end. And about 3 weeks before we started them, we all went off. One weekend to start fresh on Monday to Chatham Gunnery School, because in Chatham they had a 15-inch turret, which Whelan did not. And we spent the week doing 15-inch turret drill. I came up from Devon, and about halfway up London and down to Chatham, in the train, I can't remember which it was, I think it was my left instep, became rather painful. And I loosened the lace of my shoe, thinking I'd done it up too tight or something. But it got worse. And I made Chatham, I made the mess of Chatham about 10 o'clock at night. I went along to join the others who were slowly gathering, had a glass of beer, and got about halfway through it when I realized that if I didn't walk out pretty soon, I would pass out. And I felt faint. And by this time, my ankle was hurting a great deal. And next day, I closed up with the others with difficulty for turret drill. And turrets are, by nature, fairly cramped, and you have to climb over a number of obstacles to move any 2 or 3 feet. So, and I managed, I endured it during the forenoon. And then and I was sort of feeling rather unwell. And there was agony in the whole of my foot. And so with great reluctance, I went to the sick bay. And as a result, I was carted off to the local naval hospital. Once I was flat out in bed in the hospital, it was easier. I wouldn't put it more strongly. And I thought, you know, this is a hell of a situation, because in 3 weeks' time, I got all these exams, without which you wouldn't qualify. And next morning, the whoever, the PMO, I suppose, at the Naval Hospital, came round in a white coat, and my ankle was pointed out to him. Oh, yes, he said. Ah, well, while sort of rubbing his hands with glee, we'll give him another 24 hours and then we'll cut it. And I sort of sat quivering under the sheath and so on. And I resolved to get out somehow. And next day he came round, and it was a bit better. Quite a bit better, but it was by no means right. And he had a look at it, and he said, how is it? I said, it's very much better, so it's coming on fast. Oh, he said, well, we'll get it, we'll see how it goes, maybe it's all right. And the next day, or the one after, it was, I could walk about on it. So, and as an officer, in order to leave a naval hospital, you have to be seen off by the Surgeon Rear Admiral, who by then was past doctoring, probably, and certainly this one was. And I staggered into the Surgeon Rear Admiral, and he looked up from his desk and said, "Ah, oh, my boy, yes, do a good job on you, did we?" I said, "Absolutely magnificent, sir. Absolutely magnificent." "Ah, good, good, good." He said, "You're fit as a bell now." I said, "Absolutely marvelous." All this sort of crap went on. And as quickly as I could, I left and got back to Portsmouth through Whale Island, because I must have been off it. Hospital, etc., for really the whole of the Chatham week. And I reported to my officer instructor on the Monday morning and said, "Now look, I've got a problem, you know, because I'm by no means fit, and I'll try and get fit as soon as I can. But could I please be excused doubling and parade ground work and so forth, because I shan't make it?" And he, an understanding man, and he agreed with that. And I rang up I can remember his name. It was Ramsden, Peter Ramsden, I think. He'd been the doctor in I can't remember which. Might have been Javelin. But anyway, he'd been the doctor there as an RNVR lieutenant. And somehow I got his address, and he lived in Southsea. He lived across the water, I think, in Gosport. And I tried him on the phone, and I got him. And I explained the situation and said that I wanted to see, and I wasn't going to go near an able doctor because he understood about that, because he's an RNVR. And I said, who do you recommend this side, the Portsmouth side, that I should go and see? And he gave me a name. And that evening, in the dog watches, when normal work had finished, I put on a coat and trousers, and out of uniform, all that sort of thing, having rang up and made an appointment. Went along and saw this chap, who said, gave me some ointment to rub in, which didn't impress me, and said he couldn't do anything without an x-ray. I said, right, can you fix me an x-ray? And he did. And that was duly taken. And something like the end of that week, the Friday or so, I had a further appointment with him. And by this time, it had just about cleared up. Just about. And I went in the evening again to see him. And he looked at me rather rather straightly from behind his desk. He said, you're in one of the services, aren't you? And I saw no reason to cover up anymore. And I said, yes, I am. I'm in the Navy. And why did you come to me? He said. And I told him the truth. I said, because in by then in 2 weeks' time I have to face 3 weeks' worth of highly important examinations. And the naval hospitals are not exactly quick with their treatment. And I can't afford to get sick. And he looked at me very straightly for a moment. And then said, yes, all right. When you first came in, I thought you had TB of the bone. That shook me a bit. It's all right, he said. You haven't. And that was that.
What did you have?
I don't know to this day. Fortunately, never any repetition. I've no idea. Might have been a wasp sting. I bet how does a wasp sting get your instinct under your shoe?
Yes.
I don't know. Well, we had our 3 weeks of exams, and we got through those, and then we had, of course, it was just before Christmas, 47, we had our various parties with our instructors, and said our fond farewells, and I was appointed to the junior staff at Whale Island.
Was that normal, to go straight from being a student to being a junior instructor?
Yes, some. I mean, some went to Whale Island, some went to Chatham, some went to Liverpool.
Right.
I never knew. Could we stop there for a minute?
Yes, of course, if you wish.